public comment.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our May 16th meeting. If you all rise, please, and join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, would you introduce any changes to our calendar for this morning?
Changes to today's agenda is an added item for hearing is C4, a hearing to consider and set for final action proposed changes to the county's growth management ordinance, Title 26 of the County Code, to maintain the countywide growth rate at 2.3% and the Napoma Mesa area rate at 1.8% and set the Cambria growth rate at 0%. This item is continued from May 9, 2006. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to give notice of hearing set for May 23rd, 2006 at 9 a.m. All requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement. I did say instruct chairman, but it's actually instruct clerk. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. We'll get to our presentation. If I may entertain a motion at this time, please.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Patterson, seconded by Supervisor Lentol. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Yes.
Aye.
Any opposed? Unanimous. Thank you. At this time, I would like to invite Mike, is it Lebaugh?
Lebaugh.
Please come forward and introduce us to Judkins Middle School and Ocean View School's Destination Imagination teams. Would you please use either one of the mics?
I'd like to first thank you for having us here today. I've had the pleasure of working with students in the Gifted and the Talented program in our county for a number of years. And I found as an educator that over the course of the years, as testing becomes more and more important, less funding becomes available to work with kids that are truly going to be the leaders of our country. And it's any time we can find a program that's going to engage the students, make our county look good, and give them a learning experience that'll last for a lifetime, we try to find those opportunities. Interesting story, and I love to tell this because this is how it goes. The Dairy Farmers of America now sponsored the Destination Imagination program at a national level. Destination Imagination is the largest creative problem-solving competition in the world. Why they got the sponsorship, rumor has it, is that one of the dairy farmer president's son was involved in the program, and they created a skit where they were milking cows, but while they were milking cows, they were playing music. They listened to this skit, and they went back to their farm, and they started to play music to their cows, and they found out dairy production went up 35% from a skit that the kids created. Then we heard in France, they did the same thing, except for they played music to the grapes. And they played Mozart to grapes, and the grapes became 40% more fruity, and some of the best wine in the country now is when they're listening to Mozart. Who would have ever thought of that but kids? So we try to develop these habits that are going to be wanting creativity to be a part of their life. And in order to do this, you need administrators, you need a district, you need parents involved. Maggie Summers, if I may introduce her now, is the regional director for our county. Maggie, where are you? You can't hide. You need to come up here with me. She's taken over this, and it's a monstrous task. What we found is that some of the schools in our area have dropped out of this. And the reason, of course, is because they're stressing the testing. It's a big deal in education, and we're just trying to put a new front on this so there's a new group of kids that will learn this. Maggie may have a thing or two to say about her experience with her kids, and then we'll bring the kids up.
Sure. So right. By the end of today, our performance level should have increased by 20%.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for having us come today. The students are here, and they each, there's two groups from our area that are going to advance to the global finals, which is they're going to be against 48 states and 17 other countries. And it's kind of, I always like to joke that it's Olympics for the brain. and creativity. So we have one team from Judkins Middle School and one team from Ocean View Elementary School that are here today to do a brief presentation for you.
Can we have the, maybe the Judkins kids would like to start today? So if we can bring you guys up. They couldn't bring any of their props. What they had to do was a physics problem, or what they chose to do was a physics problem. So they built a 7.5-foot structure when one of their team members flies. They already shipped the props to Tennessee, and there'll be something like 7,500 competitors they'll be going up against. So these guys are going to be going up against 48 states, 17 countries, like Maggie says, in an area of physics. And my daughter's on this team, and I know for a fact none of them have ever had any involvement in physics in their life until about 3 months ago. So I asked them to come up here today, and you probably need to speak in the microphone, maybe introduce your name and say what it is you learned from this whole process of creative problem solving.
Yeah, would you like? And Mike, Mike.
Oh, that works too?
Do you want them to be facing the public?
Either way, if they, I can, oh, this doesn't move.
You have to push the bottom first to start it.
There you go. Why don't you face both? You
know, that button on the bottom of the mic. Push in on the bottom of the mic.
Light's on. It might be on already.
Yeah. Someone is coming forward to help you. Yeah.
It's already on. Sorry. Technical advice.
Okay. My name is Casey Watson, and when I did DI, I was very shy, and then being with a team, they made me not be shy anymore.
Hi, I'm Megan Coda, and I learned that you really have to be patient with people.
Hi, my name is Riley Lawton. This is my first year doing DI, and I learned that you have to get over any obstacle that has been put in your way to succeed.
Hi, I'm Emily Lebo, and I've been doing DI for like 5 years or something, and I've learned that you have to work as a team when you're doing instant challenges, and when you're doing challenges, you have to work as a team because there is no I in team.
Hi, I'm Cody Portwood, and before I started DI, I wasn't doing very good in school, but now I have really good grades, and I can do a lot of stuff that I wasn't able to before.
Hi, my name is Hunter Norton, and once I started doing DI, it was just fun, and I got to go to other places and meet new people, and it's been cool.
Okay, thank you, guys.
That's okay, you can leave it on.
This program, by the way, starts with kindergarten, works its way up through college. These guys are in the middle school division, which actually is where the bulk of the competition is. They're going to be going up against a lot of people because middle school kids quite often don't have the opportunity to travel like this. So thank you. If you would like to take your seats, we'll bring up our Ocean View team now. Ocean View and Arroyo Grande. These guys are advancing in the improvisational competition, meaning they go into a room, they get a really difficult problem to solve, and they have 30 minutes to come up with a 6-minute skit. And I haven't talked to you guys for a while. What is it you're going to do today for the Board of Supervisors?
We'll pick up the microphone. Push the button on the bottom. The other guys turned it off to give you a new problem. We have. There you go. There it is. It's on.
It's on. Solving technology as we go.
Nope, it's not on. Push the button on the bottom. Hold it. Help is on the way.
Hello.
Put it on the ground.
Is it working?
There we go.
Okay. You got it.
We were just going to tell about what our team learned and kind of what our challenge is about. So if we want to start with what we learned, we can...
What's your name?
I'm Kelly Barrett. I'm a fourth grader at Ocean View. And
I'm Carly Hughes. I'm a fifth grader at Ocean View. And, yeah.
Hi, I'm John, and I'm I'm a fifth grader in Ocean View.
And I'm Kyle Berlin, and I'm also a fifth grader at Ocean View. And from doing the DI, I learned how to work together as a team and to keep other people on task.
I learned how to build things like out of just stuff that you come across every day, like straws and duct tape, you know, just stuff like that, and how to build something cool with it.
I've learned how to come up with creative skits, raps, dances, anything like that, in a short amount, little amounts of time that are actually pretty good.
I've learned to go with the flow with my team and come up with really interesting things and ideas.
And we were going to tell what our challenge is about a little bit. A little tiny bit? Okay, then no.
Do you have like a rap that you...
Oh, yes, we do. Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
We want us to rap some entertainment.
Okay, one, the 30.
This is our teacher.
And we made it up.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
30, 29, 28. Not another second to wait. Well, think so hard and think so fast. Hoping an idea will come at last. Think fast, think in the box. Yay!
Bye.
Thank you.
I wanted to reiterate, too, that the Board of Supervisors helping us out in this project goes a long way, both for the morale of the kids and for the financial obligations for fielding a team. We have, talk about a hard, difficult problem to come up with, we have 3 weeks to come up with $22,000. And we wanted to make sure that the kids that are involved in this project aren't just the ones necessarily that could write a check. We want everyone to get involved that can, and we ask for the community to help us. And you've been wonderful, City of Pismo Beach, City of Arroyo Grande, community groups. The kids have been raising money. I'd like to thank you again from the bottom of my heart for helping us out as well, too.
Thank you.
Ms. Bianchi?
Yeah, I'd like to thank you for giving us all hope for the future. Thank you very much.
At this time, we'll move to public comment. First request to speak is Bob Lloyd, followed by Mr. Wampler.
Good morning, everyone. Bob Lloyd with AGP Video. Over the weekend, we had some problems with our internet site for changing domain servers around, and there was a snafu in the process. But I want to let everybody know in the public that it is slowspin.tv is working just fine. If you could bring that up, if you could, please. This is the test site for the county's Board of Supervisors that we're experimenting with, and we're still looking for input and information on the layout of the process, but I want to let everybody know that slowspan.tv is working just fine, and slowspan.org that everybody's been logging on to for years should be up and running by Thursday. So thank you very much. Oh, we're also going up to Cambria to do the Every 15 Minutes program. We're videotaping that crash scenario, and we've been working on it for the past 3 weeks. And when we got it all finished, we'd like to show it to the Board of Supervisors, and because it's turning out to be quite a very nice piece.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Mark Wampler, followed by Mary Bianchi.
Good morning, Supervisor Sajjan, members of the board. My name is Mark Wampler, Oceano resident. The Oceano Community Center is a large, beautiful building located at the corner of 19th Streets and Wilmar. Mr. Sajjan had personally given credit to himself for raising $2 million towards this construction. Most people don't realize, however, that it took 10 years to collect those funds by way of the Community Development Block Grant Program of the federal government. That's 10 years of neglect to Oceano streets and alleys. Instead of investing in Oceano's image community-wide, millions have been stuffed into this 15,000-square-foot building with a mere 18, that's 18, on-site parking spaces, all set to open next month. at the cost of close to $13,000 per month in mortgage payments to Coast National Bank. This arrangement has been described as the kiss of death for Oceano. Now, Oceano wants a community center, but this is the wrong location, wrong size, and wrong budget. In fact, the record shows that close to $5.7 million has been funneled into the project under the auspices of Oceano Community Center Corporation, a private 501c3 nonprofit headed by former 4th District Supervisor Ruth Brackett. For the last year and a half, concerned citizens have requested an audit of the corporation's finances. They have refused. Those who have requested useful information have been ignored, and the public is not welcome at their board meetings. Because public trust of the Community Center Corporation has been trampled on, last year the Oceano Advisory Committee launched an inquiry. Letters were written to the district attorney, Oceano Community Service District, and others. And a year later, I still have no evidence that a full investigation was ever carried out. In November of 2003, a news article appeared in the Times Press Recorder that outlined Oceano's financial forecast for a drainage system with its own curbs, gutters, and sidewalks. Out of the $11 million proposed budget, $7 million was budgeted for sidewalks. With a community center budget of nearly $6 million, just think how close Oceano could have come to having its own sidewalks and keeping the only park on the east side. Now, we may never know who's on the take. With no audit in sight, who can say what manner of skimming and graft has betrayed Oceano citizens? If you can come clean on this, Mr. Asajian, I suggest you consider a comprehensive and independent audit before June 6th. Thank you.
Mary Bianchi, followed by, is it Rob Shipe?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Mary Bianchi. I'm a horticulture farm advisor with the University of California Cooperative Extension. And I'm speaking today as an individual member of your Agricultural Liaison Advisory Board. Cooperative Extension serves the Ag Liaison Board in an advisory, non-voting capacity, and I've participated on the Ag Liaison Board for more than 12 years as an alternate and then as official designee for my department. Recently, you heard testimony that agriculture rose up in response to the proposed Cayucas Fringe Viewshed ordinances. Less glamorous but fundamentally more substantive are the efforts that agricultural producers have made sitting down on your advisory board for more than 40 years. These men and women have contributed hundreds of unbillable hours to the task of providing input to your board. In my tenure, we have successfully, albeit often painfully, provided your board with information that sought to balance the agendas of all of those who seek profits from agricultural lands. The request for additional review of the Cayucas Viewshed issue was an honest effort to separate fact from opinion. Apart from the question of reviewing multiple ordinance proposals, issues included whether, horticulturally, it's possible to establish adequate screening on hitherto unvegetated ridgelines, and whether, in fact, it's the location of the home that establishes lending policies for ag production loans. Your board's decision on May 2nd disregarded the collective request of your own appointees to the board, as well as the value of the advisory board input in your decision-making processes. In conclusion, I would like to reiterate that mine is an individual opinion. I have been functioning independently, both physically and intellectually, since shortly after the umbilical cord was cut. Additionally, there may be some members of the Ag Liaison Board who disagree with my comments, and therein lies the unique and powerful capacity of this advisory group. There are few opportunities in San Luis Obispo County for a broad cross-section of agricultural interest to meet in a public forum, discuss issues, and deliver advice to your board. I personally hope that you will weigh their input more completely in future decisions, and I thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today.
Thank you. Ms. Bianchi, Sr.?
I would just like to state that I can attest to the fact that she has acted independently for all of these years.
Like mother, like daughter. Ms. Scheip, followed by Chuck Pritchard.
Yes, I'm here to call your attention to some misinformation that is... My name is Rob Scheip. Sorry about that. I am one of the 50 people in the association who's being prosecuted by the Regional Water Quality Control Board. And I wanted to call your attention to some misinformation that's coming from the Planning and Building Department. Specifically, the Planning and Building Department states, on Friday, January 8, 1988, the Regional Water Quality Control Board imposed a moratorium on new sources of sewage discharge and increases in the volume of existing sources in the community of Baywood, Los Osos. The moratorium was imposed through the provisions of a memorandum of understanding executed between the county and the Regional Water Quality Control Board in December 1978 and imposes a variety of responsibilities on the county. The purpose of this memo is to set forth the official Department of Planning and Building policy on the implementation of moratorium by staff. This states throughout the rest of the document over and over again that new septic discharges are all that is illegal in Los Osos, and that is not accurate. And that has been that is basically what I'm being prosecuted for now. The memorandum of understanding between you and the Water Board states, the county representative responsible for the administration of applicable individual sewage disposal systems, ordinances, and regulations shall assure that all approved systems comply fully with such ordinances and regulations. At our hearing, Steve Carnes, I believe, of County Health, testified that the Department of Planning and Building has all authority over septic tanks. So essentially what this means is the Department of Planning and Building shall assure that all approved systems comply fully with such ordinances and regulations. And so basically the building department was supposed to help me make sure that I'm supposed to stay in compliance. I'm being prosecuted because I'm not in compliance, but the official policy of that department was that I am in compliance because only new sources of discharge are illegal. And because of that, like I said, I'm being prosecuted and I'm asking for your help. And that's basically it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Pritchard, followed by DJ Funk. Will can pass it around for you.
Good morning. My name is Chip Pritchard. I'm the president of the Upper Salinas Los Tablas Resource Conservation District in northern San Luis Obispo and southern Monterey County. We are a local government agency chartered in 1951, providing services within San Luis Obispo County and southern Monterey County to the citizens. The Resource Conservation District concept began during the Dust Bowl days in the 1930s, when the federal government attempted to work both in the Midwest and in the Great Plains to help those folks rebuild that part of the country. It became apparent that there was a conflict between the efforts of the federal government and the local communities. That effort was solved by the development and implementation of the Local Resource Conservation District, which formed a three-way partnership between the federal government, the state, and the local folks. And that three-way partnership exists today across the country with that same partnership. The Old Soil Conservation Service, which is now the Natural Resource Conservation Service, the various states, and the various local resource conservation districts which dot the country. This partnership has done a tremendous amount of good work, including the healing in that period of time of the Great Plains and of also the Midwest after the Dust Bowl days. The amount of work that was done with that cooperation that still exists today is immeasurable. Unfortunately, that is a well-kept secret. There are not enough folks that understand the function and the history of resource conservation districts across this country. In San Luis Obispo County, we have two resource conservation districts, the Upper Salinas Los Tablas, which is the northern part of the county, and a little bit of southern Monterey County, and the Coastal Resource Conservation Districts, which covers the rest of San Luis Obispo County. These two districts have been in existence since the 1950s and have provided an immeasurable amount of service and good work to the people of this county. Unfortunately, when these districts were formed, we gave up the right to become a taxing entity. I say unfortunately because at that time it was decided that that was not a a good move for resource conservation districts. We were non-regulatory. We did not want to be a direct government agency. We're kind of a quasi-government agency. And so we elected not to be put on the tax rolls. As a result of that, we did reach an understanding with the County of San Luis Obispo that in lieu of in giving up that authority, we would be granted some funds from the Special District Augmentation Funds from the County of San Luis Obispo. That took place until about 15 years ago when all Special District Augmentation Funds were taken from the county and ended up in the
state. Would you conclude, please?
Yes. So we find ourselves in a position today where we have to come before you folks and again ask for funding to help just keep these basic services in place.
Thank you. Mr. Funk, followed by Neil Havlik.
Hello, DJ Funk. I'm with the Resource Conservation District, Upper Salinas, Las Tablas, and we're here together, actually. Both RCDs are here to make a request of you for some limited funding to replace the funding that we lost about 15 years ago. But in addition, I wanted to point out that, and some of you already know, we do a lot of projects with the county, and we have a relationship and partnership that we have built with the county, as well as some of the other agencies within the county, over the number of years that we've been in existence. And that partnership has grown to the point where we are one of the prime agencies that helps with erosion issues, prime agencies that help you with water quality issues. Today we're asking for a limited amount of funding, $20,000 for each of the two RCDs to basically replace the money that was lost back in the 15 years ago, as Mr. Pritchard indicated. And in addition, also we're requesting an increase in the amount that's allocated to the Mobile Water Lab. Mobile Water Lab provides water audits and reduces the amount of water use throughout the entire county. That Mobile Water Lab program has been in existence for, I believe, around 10 or 15 years and is now both doing good beneficial work both in the agricultural areas and also the urban areas. We're very fortunate to have excellent people working for these agencies. We're very fortunate to have the cooperation of the landowners. And if it wasn't for the landowners, we wouldn't be able to do what we're doing. We do work basically for the landowners that only want that us to have that or provide that assistance. We do it on a volunteer basis for them. They come to us. We don't go to them and demand. We basically are providing a service for the landowners throughout the entire county, and that kind of service is not available not available by other agencies, and because of the trust that we have with the landowners, we're able to do the kind of work that we're able to do. I have a proposal that I'm going to submit to you, and I hope that you look on us favorably. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Howlick, followed by Ms. Hester.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. My name is Neil Havlik, and I'm the president of the Board of Directors of the Coastal San Luis Resource Conservation District. I'd like to echo the statements of my colleagues from our sister RCD in the North County. Both RCDs have enjoyed consistent logistical support from the board and from county staff on programs and projects over the year, and we greatly value that support. Both RCDs have a good track record of obtaining funding support from grant sources and others for our programs, which are aimed at water quality protection, erosion control, enhancement of agricultural productivity, and ecological restoration. In the case of Coastal San Luis Resource Conservation District, significant effort is being expended currently for these aims in the Morro Bay watershed and at Lower Arroyo Grande Creek. And we are currently expanding our efforts in the San Luis Obispo Creek watershed as well. For the past 15 years, this has been done without any direct funding support from the county government. We believe that a very modest level of funding support would improve the level of service that our agencies provide to the citizens of the county, particularly to enhance our outreach to rural landowners and to further our efforts at land and water conservation. We therefore ask for the renewed financial support from the board for our programs, and your consideration of this request would be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Hester?
followed by David Dugan.
Good morning, Chairman, board members, community members, and most especially the home care providers who are present here this morning. My name is Joanna Hester. I am a lead organizer with the United Domestic Workers of America and also with the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. We come before you this morning to support the ordinance that would make the Board of Supervisors the governing board and serve as the public authority for the IHSS program. We believe this to be for the best interest of the client and the caregivers in this county. And on behalf of our members, we thank you and your team, the county council, and everybody else who worked who took our recommendation to the ordinance. With your actions, we believe that a new partnership and a new relationship will better serve this community. We hope that this partnership continues in a positive way as we bargain for our new contract. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mr. Dugan, followed by Bill Moylan.
She had to leave early. That's fine. Dave Dugan, resident of Los Osos and candidate for the Los Osos CSD. On June 6th, elections will be held, decide among other issues the election of the three candidates for the 2nd District Supervisor. From a conversation with the electorate of Los Osos, one outcome of the 2nd District race may be a two-candidate runoff in November. What is also the consensus is that the runoff election may be decided by what might happen at the June 15th LAFCO hearing on the dissolution of the LOCSD. The perception by some is that they will decide how they will vote in the November runoff by the outcome. If the LOCSD still exists, obviously, I have a stake in that. Many people are wondering, after the letter, I believe, was in the newspaper by a certain candidate about how he will back the dissolution of Los Osos. It really will play a deciding factor on how many people in Los Osos will vote. That'll probably be around 3,000 or 4,000 votes. This is a tangled political web we weave here. There's also, in November, will be elections for the LOCSD. Of course, I'm a candidate. And that whole board could change. There could also be a petition to recall two of the board members. There could be 5 new members come November. So I would just like to remind people, interested parties, that come June 15th, decisions made on that day may well, very well decide decisions made in November. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moylan, followed by Richard Margetson.
Good morning, board members. My name is Bill Moylan. I live in Los Osos, and I would like to speak about the Los Osos CSD and the possible dissolution of the Los Osos CSD. Now, I know that several of you members are on the LAFCO committee, and you have to consider whether Los Osos should retain its own governing body or be dissolved. And I urge you to allow or to consider quite deeply that the Los Osos CSD is a good governing body. I have been working with the CSD, and I know that they are working very, very hard to achieve what is best for Los Osos. I wouldn't say this unless I knew this personally. Now, the former board was also working very hard, and there was a disagreement as far as the implementation of the sewer project. The Los Osos CSD had their hands tied when Measure B passed. They acted in the best faith of the people of Los Osos. They lived by the law. The law was that the sewer project should be moved. And I hope that you're all listening to me intently, because this is very important to me and to many other people that live in Los Osos. I know that you work hard, and so does everybody that works on the Los Osos CSD. So please give it your utmost consideration. Realize that they are doing their very best to do the best for the people of Los Osos, and that if the governing body, the CSD, is dissolved, we will not get the same representation that we have now. It is the actual governing body. And I urge Shirley Bianchi, our supervisor, to come and attend the CSD meetings. Give us your support as long as you're still a supervisor, Shirley. We would welcome you there with open arms. We would love to see you there. Just to know that you're concerned about Los Osos, whether or not you agree with the CSD's policies or not, we'd like to see you there. Thank you very much for allowing me to speak today.
Before we get to Mr. Margetson, Mr. Lentil.
Mr. Margetson, I just want to not necessarily correct you, but your comment of several members were on the board. There's only two members here that sit on LAFCO.
And one alternate.
One and one alternate, basically, is how it works.
Mr. Margetson, followed by Mr. Alan Martin.
Richard Margetson, I came today to talk about a letter in the Sunday Tribune local section from candidate for supervisor for 2nd District, Roger Anderson. The letter starts out by asking for your vote in the June 6th election, but then he goes on in this letter to basically say that the sewer project needs to be, he basically tells the community that the sewer project needs to be completed now. Well, I have some questions for Mr. Anderson. Does now mean at $200 to $250 per month, which will basically mean the economic demise of maybe 30% of the community? Does he mean now in the middle of town, even though in the election in the fall, the citizens basically voted by recalling three CSD board members that they didn't want it in the middle of the community? He's asking for those same people's vote this June 6th when the community, even though it was a slim majority, this is a democratic process. They voted to move the sewer out of town. He goes on, and I'm going to actually use some of the quotes from the letter. Federal and state agencies are watching, and I believe will not accept any further inaction on the part of Los Osos on this serious issue. If the residents of Los Osos don't solve this problem once and for all, these agencies will take control of building the project. I have to ask, does Mr. Anderson have a letter from any of these agencies stating this fact? Because I know the Los Osos CSD doesn't have such a letter. If he has such a letter, I think he should make it public to the citizens of Los Osos, the CSD, and the county also. He goes on to say, in my many years as an elected official, I have not seen any public works project that has come, projects that have gone down in cost. The Los Osos residents must accept the fact that they have to build a sewer now or one will be forced upon them. Well, my question then would be, how many projects has he overseen that came in at 46% over engineer's estimate and weren't sent out to rebid that he put his stamp on? He further states, my role as supervisor will be one to hopefully help defray the cost to local citizens of finding outside money. I have been to Washington on other matters and have been successful in bringing back federal dollars. I'd like to know how many dollars in total he's brought back to Morro Bay, and if he feels he's able to bring us 50, 60, 70 million, because that's what it's going to keep from ruining the economic future of Los Osos.
Thank you. Mr. Martin?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, fellow board members. My name is Alan Martin. I'm a 42-year resident of Los Osos, and I would like to start off by saying that I concur with Mr. Shipe's comments. I, too, am a recipient of a cease and desist order. I am also being prosecuted wrongly, I might add, and concur with Mr. Scheich's comments that the memorandum of understanding needs to be examined by county council, and would appreciate if you would direct your county council to respond to our, you know, our question regarding the situation. We are currently under siege and continuous attack and harassment. Daily we get letters from the Water Quality Control Board, day in and day out. My wife says, when is this going to stop? It just does not stop. People are pulling their hair out. There are 45 people that are under prosecution right now. We are being asked to mount a defense, defending ourselves individually. I was involved with the selection of a obtaining counsel for these defendants. Unfortunately, unless the board is willing to provide us with $50,000, that was the entry fee to obtain legal counsel to represent us before the Water Quality Control Board. I don't happen to have that loose change in my pocket, and I thought perhaps maybe the board would help us, you know, defend our situation. The Regional Water Control Board, and particularly Mr. Briggs, you know, and his prosecutorial staff, is threatening to fine us $1,000 per day, and also, if you read the fine print, an imprisonment. And as a resident, you know, I find this, as long as I've been there, you know, personally offensive, considering that I championed on two occasions to put a sewer in Los Osos, and was told by the environmental movement, Mr. Martin, if we put a sewer in Los Osos, it will open the floodgates to growth and development. And this is the environmental mindset, you know, that we had that stopped us from having a sewer early at a very, very affordable and economical, you know, price. So we are working overtime, and we have a fantastic, fantastic board of directors of our community services district. I've never seen such hardworking people trying to solve a situation that was left by a corrupt, you know, previous administration. And they're doing everything they can to give us a wastewater management system. And when I say they're working overtime, I will say they're doing it, and they're doing it diligently. And I thank you, you know, for your time.
Thank you. That was the last request to speak. We'll move. We'll continue our presentation. If Mr. Greek will come forward, please. We'll start with the Employee Service Award.
Good morning, Supervisors.
Right off.
Good morning, Supervisor Asajian, members of the board. Richard Greek, Personnel Director, assisted this morning by Heather Gunderlach. It is our pleasure to assist you in recognizing county employees who have spent 20 years serving the public and assisting us each day create the county's vision of a safe, healthy, livable, prosperous, and well-governed community. As I announce the names of the employees, we would ask that you please come forward and remain standing in the center. Heather will provide you with your pin as you come forward. And I was just told to do this a little more slowly this time. The audience, will you please hold your applause till we have everyone up front, and then there'll be an opportunity for photographs and the welcomed applause. And then after the photograph, photo session recipients are all invited to go up in a line starting to the right and shake the board members' hands, and Heather will assist in directing you in that part of the process this morning. So with that, it's my pleasure to begin reading the names. From the Assessor's Office, Jay Sechrist. From Child Support Services, Susan Goebel. From General Services, Donald Mellon. And from General Services, Norman Newman. And from the Library, Catherine Marvier. From Mental Health, Nancy Crotty. Planning and Building, Dana Lilly. Public Works, Patricia McPhee. Public Works, Peter Newell. And I actually hired Peter initially for county employment. Public Works, Joseph Phillips. Public Works, Sherry Weiss. Public Works, Scott Wetmore. Sheriff Coroner, Rita Brandenburg. And Sheriff Coroner, Ricky Cox. And our final name this morning from Social Services is Sandy Brownell, but I understand that she was not able to join us this morning. So with that, time for photographs and applause for our 20-year recipients.
Scary to see all the public works receiving 20 years. That means at one time they'd all be retiring at the same time. And how do we fill in the blank? If I may ask that everybody leaves quietly, please, and if the last person will close the door, we'll continue with our meetings. With that, we'll move on to our consent agenda. Our first request to speak is Karen Baylor, followed by Dale McGee.
Good morning. I just wanted to take a minute to... Oh, I'm Karen Baylor.
Karen, let me give you another second here till we get the noise out that way. We can pay you better attention.
I could yell.
Okay. Go ahead, Ms. Baylor.
Good. Okay. I'm Karen Baylor. I'm the Behavioral Health Administrator, and I just wanted to take a minute to acknowledge the agenda item B3, which is the Mental Health Services Act. We are thrilled to be at this point. There was a conference last week where Dr. Mayberg was speaking, who is the director of the Department of Mental Health. He said that out of the 58 counties in the state, 47 have submitted plans, 42 have been approved, and 15 had been funded. San Luis Obispo is one of the 15. I'm very proud to be leading the way within the state with transforming the mental health system. So I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank this board for your support, to thank our stakeholders, the hours and hours of staff time that have gone to this project. And I also really want to thank the Mental Health Board and all of those who were involved in this process. And I especially want to thank Dale McGee, who kept us on task and really spent many, many hours guiding, we'll say guiding, us through this process. So thank you very much. We're very excited about this, and we'll be implementing more programs after the budget is approved in beginning of July. So thank you very much.
Thank you, and congratulations.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Dale McGee, and I have been serving as the Mental Health Service Act coordinator for about the past 16 months. And I actually just would like to echo Dr. Baylor's words of marking the excitement that will come with the approval of item B3. This basically marks a planning process that has been so unique to mental health throughout the state, and particularly this county, to really look at what do people with mental illness and their families and a community need. And I just really want to again extend the thank you to the over 2,000 people that were involved in crafting the plan that you approved in April and is now before you again in B3 with the funding having been approved by the state. What this does is moves us from this planning phase to implementation. And with this, as early as actually June 1st, we will be able to begin some of the 20 new and expanded programs that the Community Services and Supports Plan provides. And also to echo Dr. Baylor, I want to thank this board's support. We have been in front of you for several times asking for different things, have seen many of you at focus groups and surveys and input process, and certainly without your support, we would not have even gotten this to the state. And also want to thank you for the core program support that you've shown recently, because without the core services, the expanded services don't help. We need this together. It's a woven program. So again, today with the approval of item B3 marks just a great, exciting time for county mental health. Thank you again.
Thank you for your efforts.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Yes, let me. Okay, I have Mr. Patterson on first, and we'll go to Mr. Lentil and to Mr. Edge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank Dr. Baylor and Ms. McGee for the fine work they did on this grant proposal. And I know how mental health programs have suffered over the years, and this is really a shot in the arm for the county. And thank you and your staff and the other 1,998 people that helped develop the program. So thank you very much.
Mr. Lentil?
Thank you. I also echo those comments, and it's one thing to approve a project or a program or to give you funding. It's another thing to have the tenacity to make this happen, and especially I know you're a taskmaster, and Karen, for the work that you've done, we should be commending both of you for the outstanding effort, because it starts right at the top, and you certainly have set the good example and made us look good up here.
Mr. Edge.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just briefly worth noting, as we're all feeling good about the health agency right now, that in the audience we have the new health agency director, Mr. Jeff Hamm, who actually officially joined our payroll yesterday. So welcome to Jeff.
Welcome, Mr. Hamm.
Well, maybe we'll get the cameras on Mr. Hamm so everybody gets to know him, put a face and a name together. If you'll stand, please. And okay.
Where am I supposed to look?
Right there.
Face forward, then turn sideways for a profile.
Thank you and welcome. That was my last request to speak on consent agenda items. At this time, bring it back to the board members. Ms. Bianchi, any items that you would like
to report? No, I was just going to thank staff from mental health. Thank you very much. I know how hard you've worked.
Mr. Lentil?
No, sir.
Mr. Patterson?
No, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Obit?
I just want to know what Dale's next challenge is going to be. She's done the court. She's now done mental health. We've got more in the county left, Dale, so stick around.
Well, boy, that's an open-ended question.
I know. I've known her for a long time, and she's been challenged with a lot of things.
She recently moved to Santa Margarita Lake, so let's look for great things happening up there.
I meant which department she was going to be looking at, or which level.
I have no other comments, Mr. Chairman.
Perhaps
Bill
wants to help build a jail.
Move approval of consent.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Bianchi, seconded by Supervisor Ovid. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Bianchi.
Yes.
Mr. Ovid.
Aye.
Mr. Lentil.
Aye.
Mr. Patterson.
Aye.
Mr. Asajian.
Aye. Thank you. With that, Madam Clerk, would you introduce the next hearing item on our agenda, please?
The next item is C1, a hearing to consider certification of the final environmental impact report for the update to the San Luis Obispo County Regional Water Master Plan and to adopt the final updated version of the San Luis Obispo County Regional Airport Master Plan. The airport is generally bounded by State Route 227 on the east, Buckley Road on the west and south, and Santa Fe Road and Light Industrial Development south of Tank Farm Road between Santa Fe Road and State Route 227 on the north. This is in the 3rd District. Recommend the hearing be continued to May 23rd, 2006.
Thank you. Mr. Edge.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just briefly, the recommendation is to continue the item. Federal Aviation Administration is a wonderful bureaucracy. It's got a few more bits and pieces that it needs to wrap up with the Services Department, and we've got it scheduled for next week's meeting, and we've every expectation that we'll roll through at that time. So we'd ask that you authorize the continuation.
Okay. With that, Mr. Lentil?
There's no further discussion.
Well, let me see if... Does anyone from the public wishes to comment on this item? Seeing none, Mr. Lentil?
Recommend we adopt staff recommendation.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Lentil, seconded by Supervisor Obit. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Yes.
Any opposed? Ayes have it. Next item, please.
The next item is C2, a hearing to consider an ordinance amending the booking fee on the county fee schedule for fiscal year 2006, all districts. This item was introduced May 9, 2006. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Morici.
Members of the board, Vince Morici with the County Administrative Office. I'll be presenting this item. The ordinance, as you heard, was introduced May 9th and is being considered at today's hearing. Counties have the statutory authority to levy a charge against cities, special districts, school districts, colleges, or universities to recover the costs associated with booking persons into the county jail. And the charge is commonly referred to as the booking fee. The county first adopted the booking fee to take effect in January of 1991. The booking fee was last amended 10 years ago as part of the county's overall fee schedule. Over the last 10 years, the fee has remained static at about $92.50. However, during the last 10 years, the actual cost related to the booking process has significantly increased. In 2004, the state amended the government code statute that allows booking fees to be charged, and the changes allow for counties to recoup only one half of the actual cost of the expenses. In fall 2005, the Sheriff Department conducted a time study of the booking process. The time study was updated earlier this year and determined that the actual cost for the allowable expenses under the statute is $217.13. Today, we're seeking to amend the fee ordinance to raise the booking fee from the current charge of $92.50 to the proposed charge of $108.50, or about one-half the actual allowable cost. Cities and districts have been provided the required 45-day notice for this hearing. The Sheriff Department has worked with the cities that have questions about the proposed booking fee. I'd like to point out that there's been a new development that occurred last week as part of the governor's May revise budget. The May revise proposes to establish a $40 million fund to pay counties for booking fee expenses in place of charging cities the booking fee. While this proposal might affect the proposed action that your board is asked to take today, staff recommends that we proceed with the approval of the ordinance since it's unknown whether the May revise proposal will actually be approved as part of the state budget. If the governor's May revise proposal does take effect, it would take precedence over the local ordinance, and if needed, we could come back at a future date to make changes to reflect the changes approved by the state. In conclusion, we would recommend that your board take testimony on the proposed ordinance and amend the booking fee as proposed. The fee would take effect July 1, 2006, and I would note that Sheriff Pat Hedges is here to answer any questions you may have about the booking process.
One question, since we're raising the fees, why aren't we raising it enough to cover the entire cost?
The reason we can't cover the entire cost, Mr. Chairman, is because the law that was changed in 2004 only allows for counties to recover one half of the actual allowable cost.
Okay,
and so on the basis of the time study, we determined the actual cost, and we're only able to recoup one half of that.
Thank you. Any other questions from supervisors? Anyone from the public wishes to comment on this item? Seeing none, bring it back to the board for a motion.
Move staff recommendation.
Second.
Second, a waive reading.
Okay, moved by Supervisor Bianchi, seconded by Supervisor Lentil. Motion also includes to waive the reading. A roll call, please.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Asajian?
Aye.
Next, Mr. Linthal?
I just seeing Sheriff Hedges here, I just want to compliment him because one of the reports that they did was very easy to read as far as the time and motion being accurate, and I want to compliment you and your staff for doing that report that we saw last month, because I think that had some great information as far as what the actual costs are and how they were quantified.
Thank you, and the sheriff agrees with you. With that, we'll move on to our closed session item. Mr. Leno.
Mr. Chairman, the board is about to meet in closed session on the items that were listed on the agenda, and since we're ahead of schedule, I'd suggest that we take our break and then have the closed session after the 15-minute break.
So you suggest that we have a 15-minute break.
And then a 20-minute closed session?
Correct.
Does anyone from the public wishes to comment on the closed session item as listed? Seeing none, we'll adjourn this meeting. We'll reconvene at 10:15 for a closed session and come back to the after the noon session, be here at 2 o'clock to reconvene again. Does that make sense, Madam Clerk?
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Live.
Thank you, and ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our afternoon session for our May 16th meeting. At this time, Mr. Linholm, would you please report from closed session?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The board met in closed session this morning on items which were listed on the agenda. The board did not take final action in closed session, so therefore no public report is required, and that's today's public report. Thank you.
Thank you. And for the record, I have a request to speak from Mr. Kovacs, who was here earlier, but we did finish our business a little earlier this morning, and we adjourned to closed session much earlier than we thought, so my apologies for that. Madam Clerk, at this time, would you please introduce the next item, hearing item on our agenda?
The next hearing item is C3, a hearing to consider amendments to the ordinance establishing a public authority pursuant to California Welfare and Institutions Code Section 12301.6, all districts. This item was introduced May 2, 2006. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
Mr. Collins, would you lead us into this process?
Yes, good afternoon, Chairman Asajian and members. Lee Collins from the Department of Social Services. This item, as you know, has had some fits and starts along the way. It was handled awkwardly by me at the beginning in terms of dealing with our existing public authority governing board, but it is before you now for public hearing. The In-Home Supportive Services Program is one that provides care to individuals in their own homes. We have, at any time, about 1,500 cases or individuals who are receiving these services. The program pays for providers who can be friends, family members, or strangers who come in and provide different kinds of domestic and personal and related care that without which individuals might have to be institutionalized. The program currently is one that pays out benefits to those individuals, about $1 million per month. And what you have before you now is really nothing to do with the day-to-day operation of the program so much as it is the governance of the program itself. The employer of record is required to be established. The public authority is that, and the public authority itself does not change. The governing board of the public authority is proposed to change from the community board that had been established previously to your board of supervisors, who would gavel in and out of order as that public authority governing board. This proposal also would establish a new public authority advisory committee who would advise your board on issues related to payment and relationships with the providers of in-home supportive services care. As you heard this morning, the union representing the individuals are in favor of this proposal. We have worked closely with council and with the existing public authority governing board to smooth out some of the issues that created some bumps along the way. And it's before you now. It would create that shift. It would change some staffing patterns. It would result in savings of between $40,000 and $70,000, a portion of which was county general fund dollars. It will improve services, improve communication at a lower cost to taxpayers. And for those reasons, I would ask that you approve the changes.
Thank you. Any questions from supervisors? Seeing none, does anyone from the public wishes to comment on this item? Seeing none, bring it back to the board for a possible motion at this time, please.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Ovid, seconded by Supervisor Bianchi.
And that would be waive the reading.
That will also include waive the reading. A roll call, please.
Mr. Ovid.
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi.
Yes.
Mr. Linthal.
Aye.
Mr. Patterson.
Aye.
Mr. Asajian.
Aye. Next item, please.
The next item is C4, a hearing to consider and set for final action proposed changes to the county's growth management ordinance, Title 26 of the County Code, to maintain the county-wide growth rate at 2.3% and the Napomo-Mesa area rate at 1.8% and set the Cambria growth rate at zero. This item is continued from May 9, 2006. Recommend approval and instruct clerk to give notice of hearing set for May 23, 2006 at 9 a.m.
Ms. Murray.
Thank you, Chairman, members of the board. After a lengthy discussion on last Tuesday's hearing, this was continued to today's hearing to talk about the items that still needed some wordsmithing so that we would have time to actually introduce a clean copy of the ordinance for final adoption next week. On your screen, I've listed in the next two slides the areas that were under consideration. What I've done is put in yellow the three items I feel that we're still kind of working on the wording for. Item three, which is increase the percent allowed to any one person under certain conditions. Item four, which is for the Napomo-Mesa area to allow added units for projects that meet certain criteria. And then to discuss whether or not your board wishes to allow carryover of unused allotments into next year. On page, item C4, page 6, we included some wording that had to do with how to qualify for additional percentage of the total allotments. And for the Napomo-Mesa area, the added areas were for the projects that are in the Old Town Napomo design plan, and also projects that result in completion of construction of sections of road improvements in the South County circulation study road improvement list. However, we would like to discuss that a little bit further because some of the projects that are currently on the list are not doing the big million-bazillion-dollar improvements. They're doing interim improvements that will help the situation in advance of the bigger funding issues. The other item that needs to be discussed is between 2000 and 2005, that's not 200, that's 2000, there were 43 unused allocations. And the proposal on your staff report, pages 4 and 5, is to allow up to 35 of those units to be captured for the Napomo-Mesa area for projects that meet certain criteria, such as smart growth, mixed use, being in the Napomo Old Town area, or providing some traffic improvements. And so we need to finalize our discussion of what those criteria should be so we can finalize the wording and introduce it today. One of the questions that came up at last hearing was, if we make these changes, what will that do to the existing waiting list? And I've tried to put together a chart here that would indicate where units that are currently on the list would fall out. The projects are in order of which they were received for our allocation list. As you can see, the first one on the list, the use permit is still under consideration. It's going to Planning Commission in August. So as of July 1, it would not be eligible for allotments.
The next ones on the list are a mixed-use project that apparently 35% of those units are in the affordable category. So if those proposed changes were supported, 20% would be the numbers or percentage of allotments they would be eligible for. And the numbers under the first column of the RMF list, they would get approximately 25 of those units. Cypress Ridge would also be selected in 06-07. And then when we get to Project 691 West Taft and Chestnut Villas, those are potentially projects that would qualify for those extra 35 units. The changes to asking that residential, rural, and other cluster divisions outside of urban and village reserve lines would come out of the residential multifamily plan development list would result in that slow trio project coming off our multifamily list and actually being able to be selected out of the single family list. And then finally, the Butterfly Court units could potentially come off or be selected in 06-07 off the multifamily list, still leaving some additional units available because 44 units would be available for 06-07 in the multifamily list. Again, a review of what's on the table for next year. 2.3% countywide is 988 units. If you adopt carryover, that's an additional 110 from last year's unused allotments. The Woodlands gets 165 individually, and then that would total 1,263 units for the year. For the Mesa, 127 units would be available for that particular area, and if you added the additional 35 units for those identified projects, it would total 162 units. So what we need to do is discuss the wording of the proposed changes and introduce that exact wording. I would suggest that after we have our discussion and you take public testimony, if you do have some things that you want us to write, we can take a short break, put it all down, and then display it for everyone to see and comment on.
Thank you, Ms. Murray. Any questions by supervisors? Supervisor Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Murray, in your previous slide, you mentioned that there's 43 units available or that were unused between 2000 and 2005, I believe, and then throughout the discussion of the actual item, we used 35 units. Which is it?
There are 43 units that are unused between 2000 and 2005. We are only suggesting that 35 of those units be captured for this upcoming year so that the growth rate doesn't exceed 2.3%. The 1.8 is the base for the Napomo Mesa area.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
And when you say not to exceed 2.3, which is based on the environmental impact report done for that fiscal year?
That is correct. The 2.3% right. was evaluated through the EIR.
Supervisor Bianchi?
Isn't the 35, the number 35 was chosen instead of number 43 because that's the difference between 1.8 and 2.3?
That is correct.
Yeah, so there was a reason for limiting it.
I think the reason limiting it because, again, going back to the environmental impact report, which was based on 2.3 during the year that we had 2.3 in place.
Okay. Correct.
Okay. Any other questions? Seeing none, I'll go to the public. First speaker is Jerry Bunin, followed by Bob Blair. If others wish to speak, please bring forward a yellow tag.
Jerry Bunin, Government Affairs Director, Home Builders Association. As you know, this process has been painfully confusing and frustrating. We have been known for the last year what the rules are for a general plan amendment or a subdivision in Napomo. I read the minutes from the meetings and they were still confusing. There's no agreement on what you did last week. There was no agreement among the supervisors or the staff of what was on the table for today. It wasn't on your agenda online. It wasn't on your agenda outside. Everyone was really confused by this process. I have a couple of suggested improvements. I hope you'll take them in the spirit that this will make it better for all of us. I really think you should hold the resource management and the growth management hearings much closer together. If not the same day, maybe 1 or 2 weeks apart, holding them 6 months separated simply added to all the confusion we all felt. I think you should hold those hearings in mid-March or mid-November, so you're not under the deadline pressure that you've been under that added to the confusion that we're dealing with today. And I also think you should publish your findings. We would like to have a written statement of what the rules are that apply to building in Napomo. It doesn't exist now. One point about Tuesday's testimony, several people complained because developers were supporting the staff recommendation. I think we believe that property owners should have equal rights under the law to protect their home, their investment, and their property, regardless of if the land is zoned commercial or residential, or if it's east or west of 101. The people who bought homes from us in the last few years didn't buy any special treatment under the law, but they have added to the water and the traffic problems that they now want us to fix. Our recommendations for today are to support the original staff recommendation from last week. We believe the property on both sides of US 101 in downtown Napomo should be treated the same and have an equal opportunity to obtain any extra permits by meeting identical criteria. We completely oppose forcing property owners west of 101 to pay extra road fees that aren't even enumerated in what they are to fix existing problems without some means of reimbursement. We believe the extra permit should be awarded on a first-in-line basis that meet the criteria, since that's the fairest. If you rent them in a beauty contest, you're going to make those units very expensive. A one-year fix, like I believe is on the table, is a finger in the dike. It will not support smart growth. It will not support mixed use. Anyone who's not currently in the pipeline is going to sit there and wait till they get some kind of a permanent decision from you so they know what's coming at them. I know you spent a lot of time on this, and so did your staff. We really do appreciate it. We hope it results in something that will actually encourage smart growth and contribute to fixing the traffic problems in Napomo. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Blair, followed by Nancy Brown.
Afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Bob Blair, Aurora Grandy. Paper said this was going to be on supplemental water, too. I guess the paper was mistaken. Growth in Napomo. You seem to want to put the growth where the biggest traffic problems are, either in Old Town or around Test Street. I think some of the growth should go out into different areas. Like you returned down a nice project in Cypress Ridge. Houses could have went into Cypress Ridge, and they have more than one access to the freeway and to get off the Mesa. Yet this project was denied. My neighbors who live in Summit Station, we don't have any problem getting on the freeway. I can get on the freeway in 2 minutes. Yet we're not allowed to build at all. It seems that you're making all this growth go in the wrong place, and you're not fixing the problem of infrastructure. You know, and the developers have, and I'm not pro-developer because I'm not going to build anything, but the developers have offered to build the pipeline, the developers have offered to solve the road problems, but nobody wants to let the developers build. And in the last meeting, Shirley asked me if I wanted to raise my taxes. Absolutely not. And I think if you pass any kind of bond or any kind of assessment district, you're going to get the same answer from the rest of the people. We're not going to raise our taxes to build roads that should have been built with developer fees in previous years. I mean, I keep harping about Nevada, but this thing that you have here in San Luis Obispo does not happen in the rest of the United States. It does not happen in the rest of the state of California. And it's been happening in Santa Barbara, and if you look at their ballots, they want to split that county in half because the people in the north part of the county are fed up with this nonsense. They say, hey, turn us loose, we want out of here. Well, we can't do that in San Luis Obispo, but we need some kind of shift here where the fees go to the people in Napomo. Like I said before, you people have a real problem, but you need to direct this money into infrastructure. Not into bike trails, although we do need bike trails, especially on Las Vegas Road. But you just need to get infrastructure into Napomo. And if that means letting some of these people build something, then let them build something. But don't force them to build high density, because I don't think the people in Napomo want high density. They would much rather see people out on 1 acre, 2 acre, 5 acre tracks. I don't know. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Nancy Brown, followed by Nancy Carlson.
Oh, I just kind of want to reiterate what the other...
Give us your name for the
record. I'm sorry. I'm Nancy Brown, and I live in Napomo, and I would like to reiterate what the other gentlemen have said. I would also beg you to please listen to your constituents in Napomo. We cannot say that we're against growth because we know that's inevitable. And go ahead and put your commercial things along the freeway area there, such as on the Crystal Oaks area that is being talked about. But if I understand it correctly, that particular property at the moment is zoned for one home per 5 acres, and now they want to do all this high-density things in there. And I'm just begging you, really, to leave it one home per 5 acres. Go ahead and put your commercial stuff there, but leave the rural atmosphere of Napomo, which is what we all came here for. Thank you.
Ms. Brown, what's in front of us today is what we're talking about, mixed uses mainly on Old Town Napomo and Taft Street. That project is not even in front of us as we speak. I want to be sure that we were on the same page.
That's true. That's true.
It's not in front of us. We won't be making a decision for that project at this time.
Right.
So our decision will be made for what's in front of us today. Ms. Carlson, followed by it's Bill Graves.
Good afternoon. I'm here to speak about the...
So would you give us your name?
Nancy Carlson.
Thank you. Even though I call you with your names, you need to give us your name for the record coming from yourself.
Some years ago, you lowered the growth rate percentage in Napomo to the 1.8. And I think at that time you also did it for Cambria. And it was due to the shortage of water in our area. And as far as I can tell or I've read, nothing really has changed since then. So the current infrastructure in Napomo, which includes the water, does not support an increase at this time. Our water situation is in an overdraft, and our roads are congested and will become more so when the Woodlands and other current developments are completed. The charming character, rural character of Napomo is rapidly changing in a very negative way, and I believe it's the board's responsibility that the proper infrastructure is put into place before any consideration of growth in the rate and the growth rate is considered. I ask you to vote down this request for a raise in the growth percentage rate. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Graves, followed by Dennis Sullivan.
Good afternoon. My name is Bill Graves. I'm a resident of Napomo. Been in Napomo since 1999, and I moved here for the rural aspect of Napomo. I plead with the council to keep the growth cap at 1.8%. The bottom line, even though I've heard numbers like 35 or 43 additional units, it seems to me we're talking about in Napomo, when you factor in Woodlands and everything else, almost 400 new homes in this fiscal year. And I think we just don't have the water, we don't have the infrastructure, we don't have any of that that will accommodate that kind of growth rate. And when it comes to the low density or the high density housing, we just had an incident in Napomo of 50 gang members involved in some altercations right there in our little community. And the higher the density, the more of that we're going to have. And I think the county supervisors for giving me the time. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Sullivan, followed by David Gray.
Sorry, I sleep the switch there. Dennis Sullivan, Cypress Ridge. I'm going to take a little different tact towards this discussion than I've heard elsewhere. If you look at the South County planning area, it is many times larger than any single city in San Luis Obispo County. It's a very, very large area with very different problems in different areas. What you are doing is you're taking a broad brush approach. You are painting everybody into the same color and the same canvas with the restriction of these building permits. I believe that a more sensible approach is that the area be split on a line that was drawn some years ago that
had to do with how the traffic is handled in the Mesa. There's a North Mesa assessment district, and there's a South Mesa assessment district. There were clearly money contributed for road improvements on the North District do not go to solve the problems in Napomo. All I've heard since I've been listening to the public testimony is about Napomo. But Napomo is only a small portion of the whole planning area. And I think that we definitely need to take a look at breaking it into smaller segments and dealing with the issues that relate to those segments. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Gray, followed by Ms. McCarthy.
Hi, I'm David Gray. I would like you to go back to the staff recommendations from the last meeting. I think that would be the appropriate changes for the growth management. And we have property on the west side of TEF that has been approved for development, and I just don't feel it's fair to have different treatments for different sides of the 101 freeway there. Also, the I'd like to have the permits be awarded on a first and light basis also. I think that would be fair. And then again, I would like to have a longer than a one-year fix. Planning and everything is a much longer process than 1 year out with everything that goes on in development. And we need longer than a one-year fix. Thanks.
Mr. McCarthy, followed by Rick Dean.
Good afternoon. My name is Vincent McCarthy. I'm a resident in Napomo. I'm also a member of the Traffic and Circulation Committee, which I would like to discuss at this point. The 1.8% growth cap has done some good. It has brought forward a lot of developers who are now willing to spend their own money to help build the roads and intersections and the infrastructure that we need. I would like you to consider leaving the growth cap at 1.8%, because if you raise it, there will be no more incentive for these builders to go ahead and build these roads and get reimbursed later on. One of the other areas that I wanted to talk about was Old Town. Old Town has all its infrastructure already in place. It's not being used for anything. If you could transfer some of these allotments to the Napomo's Old Town, where the infrastructure is already in place, you would start to get some money back on the investment of the millions of dollars you put to make it the way it is right now. I want you to give that some consideration, some thought. Because also, too, added to the traffic problem we already have in Napomo is another 165 homes from the Woodlands. And regardless of whether you want to consider that part of the growth cap or not, it's a reality to us. I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Dean, followed by Jesse Hill.
Rick Dean from Napomo. I'd like to, first of all, thank the board for considering taking an innovative step to help Old Town Napomo. That's an area that you've spent and the taxpayers have spent $3 to $4 million to improve the infrastructure, and now it just sits there and grows weeds and goes downhill. What is the point of trying to revitalize an area if you're not going to do something to take the next step to build some buildings to keep Old Town alive? I've made some suggestions, which I passed out to the county's county planning's recommended changes, and I really am very happy with the job that Kim Murray did on this, and I hope that you'll pass it if you do approve the additional 35 units. I do have a couple of minor wording changes that I'd recommend. On page 2, the reference on item A at the top, the reference to smart growth and green build, we've decided that county planning has said and SCAC has said, and your board doesn't really know what smart growth even is.
Mr. Dean, let me interrupt for a second, and I'll give you credit for the time lost.
Okay, thank you.
Let's give Ms. Mary a copy of what we have so she can follow up at the same time.
Yeah, I have one extra one, so okay. She should have had it.
Did he lose any time while I interrupted him? You apologize. Okay. Apologize for that.
Okay, thank you. So I would recommend removing smart growth in Greenbelt because there's, if you read 10 different books on smart growth, you'll get 10 different definitions of what smart growth is. If you just say Old Town Napomo and senior housing or mixed use consistent with the Old Town plan, then you've already got whatever this term smart growth is. It's already in there. The other suggestion I would make is that with respect to the roads, the project should contribute materially to improving the traffic and circulation on existing or proposed collector or arterial roads. If you just have curbs and gutters or little minor roads, it's not going to help the traffic in Napomo at all. And if we're going to approve additional units, there has to be some real benefit to Napomo, and that would be serious improvement in the traffic. Aside from that, if you don't feel like you want to give Old Town the additional 35 units, I would argue that the questions about affordability, Cider Village has already been approved, and that's 40 units that are coming to Napomo shortly. Roosevelt Project, you'll be seeing shortly, that's another 52 units. In the next year or so, we're going to have ground broken for 92 low-income units in Napomo. That's almost double the 2.3 that we're talking about. So our effective growth rate is now going to be 4%, and there's nothing we can do about that. If we're going to do the additional 35 units, we need to put them on Old Town. Otherwise, I urge you to hold the growth cap at 1.8%. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hill, followed by Ed Eby.
Jesse Hill, resident of Napomo. I want to just correct one thing that Mr. Dean had said last time. He was talking about road fees, and he started talking about $4 million that went to $40 million. Those were never the numbers. 4 years ago, I re-looked up the number, and it was $20 million at that time. Of course, it is $40 million now for Willow Road Extension. But I am stumbling a little bit because I didn't see part of the prior presentation. But I think that it's important to remember that you're talking about 10 units in Old Town, and that's it in terms of the total for their project. And when you're looking at the larger picture of the infrastructure that's gone into Old Town and the projects and the problems that I see every day when I walk out of my house, I see mothers with strollers, they're walking in the street on Taft. You've got cars traveling beyond there at 50 miles an hour. I see little kids walking to school every day because they walk from parts of Old Town where that my partner owns, his dad owns those, and the little Mexican kids are walking down the street, and they're out in the middle of the street. You've got traffic going through the west side with no sidewalks because those projects are not being developed. And to me, there are significant and substantial reasons that I see every day why you would want some curbs, gutters, sidewalks, just for safety reasons of the people who are riding their bikes through there constantly and down Taft. And it's a very dangerous situation. If you don't have those projects, you're not going to get those sidewalks. You're not going to get any improvements on that side. So pushing it all to Old Town, I don't know. I didn't hear the logic. I didn't see the language. But there's a whole lot of reasons why you want to, in addition to just look at the traffic situation with respect to the big issue that you're talking about, but curbs, gutters, and sidewalks down the West Taft side is a true health and safety issue. And, you know, honest to God, I'm watching these kids walk to school every day, and it is not safe. So my thinking is that, I mean, everybody can make their own arguments, and you can say, well, you know, he's up here making his argument as to why, because he's got a project on that side. But that's what I truly do see. And you're talking about a real safety issue. So to me, if I was sitting in your shoes and I was going to tee up and determine which of the projects I think should go first, I would make a very strong argument that I think you ought to have the West Side projects go forward on a priority basis significantly before the Old Town side. So, well, anyway, I'm out of time, but I mean, you can make arguments on any side, but in all fairness, I think Mr. Bunin was on the mark. If you're on the list, you're on the list.
Thank you.
Mr. Eby, followed by Susie Hemrick.
Hello, I'm Ed Eby. I'm the current chairman of the South County Advisory Council, and we have brought recommendations to you on this before, and I want to thank you for the improvements you've made to the revisions to this ordinance. Also thank the staff. You've come a long way in getting towards what Napomo really needs. Think it needs a little more tweaking, though. In Section 3 of the Title 26 revision, we still have the old words smart growth and green build in there. Smart growth is a term for a type of building that is not defined. The term will be defined to you as planning staff brings this to you in the fall. At that point, there will be a definition of what smart growth is. But right now, I don't see how you can pass an ordinance saying something should have smart growth when there is not a definition of smart growth. Similarly, green build is a standard that's applied to commercial buildings. There is no green build for residential. Perhaps planning will make some wording into that to codify that so that it can come to you in the fall also. But I think this ordinance can do very well without the words smart growth and green build. They're ambiguous, and I think they can give you problems in the future. Secondly, in Section 9, there's the same problems there in Section 9F3I, same words, smart growth, green build. I think if you just deleted those, this would be a much better ordinance. In Section 9F3II, talks about long-term affordability. Affordable housing is not covered by the growth management ordinance, so to put some allocation in there for affordability seems to be like piling types of development into the growth management ordinance that already have an infinite allocation elsewhere. Affordable housing does not come under a growth management ordinance, and if you set an allocation for it, you're pushing out other things that should be in there. For example, I think it was mentioned earlier, we have just this year 92 affordable housing units being proposed. They either have or will come before you this year, and those are outside of the growth management ordinance. And that 92 is almost as big as the entire growth management ordinance allocation. So I think if you took the reference to affordability out of there, this also would be a better revision to Title 26. Thank you very much.
I will ask that question to our council after public comment period. Ms. Hemrick.
Good afternoon. My name is Susie Hemrick, and I am a resident of Napomo at 680 Willow Road Extension. I wanted to be here last week, but a bad back kept me from making the trip. So forgive me if I repeat anything that already was discussed last week, because at 5 o'clock the radio cuts off when you live in rural Napomo and you don't get Channel 21. It's like, uh-oh. So I kind of got cut off on the discussion. About a year ago, I realized that we had a real problem in Napomo. We had a lot behind Chevron Station where the owner wanted to develop some apartments. In fact, Vince McCarthy, as the area representative, had a meeting where the neighbors got together, the council worked together, the applicant worked together, and we came up with a senior housing project. When they went up, and it was something the community embraced and actually liked, when they came up to go into the planning process, they realized that they could not build the project till 2013, and they put the property up for sale. What a loss. You have all this community input. You have something the community wants, and you've lost it. So whereas I understand the people who come up here and talk about the lack of infrastructure in Napomo, I'm very well aware of that, but it's not going to change if we shut the door on the freeway. We have to look at really wise choices, and that's why I heartily endorse the staff recommendations. One of the things that I do agree with, I feel very passionate about Old Napomo, so yes, I'd like to see Old Napomo get a little favoritism, but I totally agree with Jesse
I see those moms with strollers and those cars going by 50 miles an hour, and one child is one child too many if we lose them. So I'm almost wondering if we could put some terminology that if it was a project that was in a specific plan, which we have the Old Town design, and we have a document that's out there that just needs to go for final approval for the West TEF design, and I think that would embrace those areas and also bring more of a balance to each area. So again, I endorse staff recommendations, and I thank you for bringing this to the board. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else would like to comment on this item? That was my last request to speak. Seeing none, I close it to the public comment at this time, bring it back to the board. Just to say something, to follow up on what Ms. Hermerich said, prior to that, if those folks who thought a few units to serve the needs for the seniors' housing is a good one, and when they put it out for sale, it will be within their rights to put in a mini storage, which a commercial building, which will be exempt. And the whole idea is, do we have too many of those, and what else can we bring in? But also at the same time, give them a little bit of a yellow-green light to move forward faster with the blessings of the community. A question was brought by Mr. Eby about, or a suggestion about allocating affordable housing, and I want to turn over to the council. I don't know if we can legally do that, but let's get a legal opinion.
Would you please repeat the suggestion?
Affordable housing, can you allocate them, or can you cut down on the numbers that come to New Pomo? I know they're exempt from any growth cap, but can you say we can, if I'm saying this correctly, can you put a number to that? Can you say we can only want so many per year? If there is more demand for affordable housing?
If I understand the question correctly, since they're exempt, you could limit the exemption if you wanted to limit the number of affordable housing units. But since they're exempt, I'm not sure what you would gain by trying to count them in terms of the total number of units allowed. Do I understand the question correctly?
Mr. Eby, would you like to put it in your own words?
He was to eliminate the word affordable housing, eliminate the word smart growth.
No, but I think he said cut down on the affordable housing numbers.
No, what I meant to say, and I'm sorry if I didn't make it clear, in Section 9 there's a reference to affordability and a preference for affordability.
Yes.
What I'm saying is, affordable housing is already exempt. You do not need to carve out an allocation that's going to push other people out of the way to put affordable housing into the growth management ordinance. It's already there.
Thank you. And while you're up here, may I ask, the projects that we're talking about, they're pretty much gone through the system. And if I can ask you the question as a member of the Nipomo Community Service District Board, my assumption is that they all have will serve letters because Ms. Carlson brought the issue of the water.
The two that I know about, the total, one's 40 and one's 52, both of those have been, their intent to serve letters have been issued.
Okay.
Where they are in the planning process, somebody else
it's
would have to say
story.
That.
But when it comes to water, these folks already have
they are in the
intent to serve letter from CSD.
But in the NCSD water allocation procedure, the second one that I'm most familiar with is the one that we approved last week, and that one has 52 units, and I believe they will get their water allocations in a four-year period. In other words, one-fourth the first year, one-fourth. So they're facing a water allocation stretch out just like other people face a growth management stretch out.
Okay. Thank you, sir. With that, I want to turn into the record a couple of letters I received. One is from Jim Taft, and let me read it. It's a short paragraph. It says, your actions may have saved Old Town Nipomo from turning into a blighted area. I'm just reading a sentence from a whole paragraph, and they're supportive of the staff's recommendation. And I personally want to thank Old Town Nipomo folks, too, as much as we all work together, but they did a lot of bake sales to a golf tournament to finish that project. And these folks who are members on that board are not your local developers. They're just local mom-and-pop operations, and their roots go very deep into the community of Nipomo. Received another letter supporting, semi-supporting the staffs with some recommendations. Is from the Housing Trust Fund,
And since we have more than one copy here, I would like to give one to Ms. Murray if you don't have one, and give the other one to Madam Clerk for the records. Going back again, I believe Mr. Abbey brought this last time about affordable housing and the project that went through the Planning Commission. The first time I was able to look at that project, and if Mr. Stevenson was here, he'll say the same thing, that the first word came out of my mouth was that was too massive looking. If anything, I would like to discourage, I guess that's the word you used last time, is if we didn't discourage affordable housing, is the massiveness, because we have projects when a developer, if they can maximize the units, the more credit they get. It seems like it's working against the desire of the community. And if anything, I would personally discourage will be that portion there. And, of course, the right place for me to make a decision will be right here if that was that project was ever brought to our attention at the board level. You wouldn't see me in the Planning Commission. You read plenty about what has happened in Pismo Beach, and I don't want to go to that level. I'm supportive of being supportive of Old Town Nipomo, because that's one area that has the infrastructure that can support commercial, and commercial is also exempt. So all what we're saying, the property will be used by commercial building, is the additional mixed use, which some of us don't want to use the smart growth principles, but that was the idea, where a person can work and live at the same time or leave their cars parked behind, so it's less traffic, less pollution. That's where the principles of smart growth comes into the picture. But where I'm having a problem is, how can I be fair to all concerned if I say, if you're on this side of the freeway, you're okay, but if you're on the other side of the freeway, you're not? What makes one person better than the other? We can benefit from a commercial because, as I said, they're exempt, but when they bring some benefit to the community, if it's sidewalks, money for relieving traffic, it can be on both sides. So I don't know how we're going to how we get there by allowing advantage to one side, not to the other, understanding that the east side is readily available with their parking structure, with their the widening of the road, with the sidewalks. It's ready to go, and I'd like to see them move forward and bring little economy, boost to the economy to the old town side, but not for the reason that I don't want to see the same happening to the other side. It's complicated. I think we're going someplace. I also agree with those of you. Mr. Dean brought up the idea of getting rid of the smart growth and green belt, where I somehow agree with him that this is coming back in the near future, within probably another 60 days, Ms. Murray, or 90 days, that we'll be discussing as how it should impact countywide as where we go with those projects. Let me take a break and turn it over to other supervisors and see where we go in the final with this. Ms. Bianchi, followed by Supervisor Patterson.
Yes, I would kind of like to remind everyone that our Board of Supervisors has approved smart growth principles as a policy for growth for this county. They're fairly well defined, and I'm not going to go into them now, but Supervisor Ashajian touched on them briefly. For urban design principles, it's making sure that there are plenty of alternative methods of transportation, that their bus stops are close enough to the housing, that and even though I freak out over bicyclists, that there's plenty of room for bicycle lanes as well. I freak out over the bicyclists because where I live, they don't have bike lanes, and they ride down the middle of the road. There's also something called low-impact development, which is kind of another term for smart growth, but it's keeping any kind of development having a low impact on the on air quality and traffic and I'm not quite as familiar with the principles of low impact development. It's called LID. LEED, I certainly would not want to take any mention of LEED or whatever the green build. This building we're in now is a green build, and the new elementary school in Cambria is a marvelous example of green build. It unfortunately was built in the wrong place, but that was because of the Coastal Commission, so we won't go into that. But the structure itself is terrific. It uses very little electricity. It's a good way to go, let me put it that way. And I kind of smile at Ms. Hermrick with the radio going off at 5 o'clock because I live in the rural North County. And now, however, if you can, if you have a telephone line that is up to snuff, you can get the Board of Supervisors on slowspan.tv starting, what did Paul say, Thursday? By the end of this, by next week, you can get slowspan.tv. I live so far out, I can't get it on my telephone line. But relative to saying that the mixed-use developments and smart growth principles, etc., projects ought to go in Old Town Napomo, I don't see a problem with that to start out with because, you know, where I live, I can't put in a subdivision. I'm not treated the same as people who live in Cambria. It just would not be a good... it would not be good planning to put a subdivision on my property. When Old Town Napomo, when the east side and the west side of Napomo are equal in infrastructure, are equal in curbs, gutters, and sidewalks, et cetera, then do away with giving Old Town Napomo the edge for a while. So I don't. I have no problem with it being, you know, one side or the other.
Another suggestion came from Mr. Bunin because of we bring this time of the year. Ms. Murray, if you make a note of that in the future, we might be able to bring this much earlier so that we have enough or proper time to go back and forth between the community and ourselves to work out the details with less rush. Mr. Patterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Ms. Murray, and that's regarding the projects that you listed earlier. You put a table up listing a variety of projects and how the additional 35 units would be allocated if we did give projects priority based on smart growth or mixed use, et cetera. And there are a couple that actually had some traffic impact mitigations that qualified them. And my question to you is whether or not when those projects were processed, if those particular traffic mitigations were not a requirement of the project or a condition of approval. Do you know? In other words, would they be happening anyway? Would they have to complete those in order to complete their project? I think you have two on the list.
I do know that they were part of those project developments, but I don't know if they were required as part of the mitigations. I'm sorry, I don't have that answer.
Okay. Cammy, do you happen to know?
Cammy Griffin, County Planning Staff. I don't know that I can answer definitively. Typically, road improvement conditions are just standard conditions that would be placed on the development of either a subdivision or the development of a site, not necessarily as mitigations, but just conditions that would be applied.
Okay, so it's likely that they may have been required to do that anyway.
Yes.
As part of the approval.
As part of the approval.
Okay, thank you. I want to comment on a couple of comments that were made during public discussion here, and that's regarding the suggestion that we remove the smart growth and the green bill criteria from those criteria that will give projects preference, and I'm opposed to doing that. I think, as Supervisor Bianchi stated, this board did adopt smart growth principles, and if you look at last week's staff report, you'll see that they're clearly defined in the staff report as to what they are and how they'll be applied. Now, granted, that hasn't been sorted out yet with the green bill, but I think it's important that we start encouraging people to follow smart growth principles and adopt green build strategies. It's to all of our best interest, and I would like to see them stay in there. Also, I want to point out that basically the projects that are currently on the list for development in the Pomo, if we apply those additional 35 units and use the criteria that we've described, mixed use and senior housing and affordability and so forth, those projects will basically use all of those credits. Now, some of the projects, I believe it was Mr. Dean commented that, you know, if we add another 35 units to the ones that would be allowed anyway, it's that much more impact on the Pomo. Well, not all of those necessarily will be built out this coming year, because some of those projects, while they did get additional units, did not get enough to fill out the project. So they're waiting for another year or two. So it doesn't necessarily mean that they're all going to land this year. And again, I think it's a good strategy to use to get the kind of development that we need and want in the Pomo. And I know that there have been water issues down there, and there are circulation, meaning traffic issues down there. And this board is beginning, along with staff, to aggressively look at those issues and sit down and try to come to some solutions. I am not a believer in making the problem worse before we make it better. We've been making it worse for years, but I think in this past year, we've really started to work together to come to some solutions or come up with some strategies that will lead to solutions. Part of that is allowing the development to continue, the kind of development we need in the county, and the kind of development that will help finance and address the water issues and the circulation issues in the Pomo specifically. We do have staff coming back in a couple of weeks to take a look at new funding options for us to get that Willow Road overpass built, which we desperately need in the Pomo. If we wait for development fees to get enough money to build that overpass, the cost of construction is outpacing the development fees. It'll never happen, so we have to look at alternatives. And I want to remind you that last year, when the growth management ordinance was before us, I was the only one of the five supervisors that voted against it. And I voted against it because we had the 1.8 growth cap for Napomo instead of 1.0, which I think at the time staff might have recommended, and also a number of people from the advisory bodies in Napomo. And so what's changed in the last year? Why am I supportive of this, you know, 1.8 with the additional 35 going to the type of development that we feel we need here in San Luis Obispo? What's changed for me is the fact that over the past year we have aggressively addressed these issues, and we're moving forward with solutions, and I think this is part of the solution. So quite frankly, I'm in favor of the staff's original recommendation. And what brought it back to us today was that we threw in the caveat that Old Town had a priority, the east side over the west side, and as Ms. Hemrick and Mr. Hill pointed out, there are problems on both sides, and that we really need to be addressing the problems on both sides, and I don't think that we should necessarily focus on one or the other. And the final thing regarding affordability, while affordable homes in an inclusionary project are exempt, what would give a project priority if it included affordability was that often projects are market rate projects, but when they include 35% affordability within the project, then that gives them an advantage, and I think we ought to leave that in there. So quite frankly, I'm supportive of what the staff brought before us last week, and that's what I'd like to see happen.
From last week to this week, last week we had it applied to both sides, and this week we were emphasizing Old Town.
Language is in there, yeah.
Last week, the criteria for being able to qualify for those extra 35 units was that you were smart growth, green build, mixed use, that sort of thing. And last week, what your board tentatively did was to throw being located in the Napomo Old Town Design and Circulation Study area as an additional criteria, so that it was either you're on the east side and you're in that old town area and you're doing smart growth, green build, mixed use, something like that, or you're on the west side and you're contributing to fixing the traffic problems.
Which everybody does anyway, in a sense.
In addition to paying traffic fees for the traffic improvements.
No, clarify that. Are we penalizing one by paying more than the other side? Is that what you mean by...
For the projects that are on that waiting list, there are several that are providing some road improvements that are the more local connector streets that are
going to help. Okay, those are on reimbursement basis with an agreement with the county.
That's what we're working on.
Not necessarily well saying that if you're on the west side, you have to go deeper in your pocket than if you're
You still have to implement whatever conditions of approval were placed on that.
Yeah, which applies to either side.
Correct.
Okay. I want to clarify that. Supervisor Ovid?
In all the conversation been going on, I haven't heard any recommendations for change on what's been presented, so I would move that we introduce the ordinance as presented.
Okay.
As presented this
well, I'll
today?
Second it. Second it.
There's a second for discussion. Let's go. Moved by Supervisor Ovid, seconded by Supervisor Bianchi. Under discussion, Supervisor Bianchi, followed by Supervisor Patterson.
Okay, I want to be as presented today. Is that what the motion?
Well, there's no exhibit on it, but it's
the one that was presented. That has the pink sheet on it. Okay.
This has the language in it that we recommended last time, and nobody has made any recommendations to change it.
Okay, I would like to add one thing, however, for the people who've moved to Napomo for the rural, you know, quality of life, so to speak, smart growth encourages growth to be in the already urbanized areas so that it doesn't sprawl out into, of course, to me, a five-acre parcel in town anyway, but it doesn't sprawl outward. So you would want smart growth principles.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Bianchi. I think I'm going to ask the question before we go any further, but I'll allow the other supervisors to go forward because we're emphasizing in what we have in front of us for Old Town Nippon, which I support, but at the same time, I don't want to penalize the west side, so we'll come back to that in a minute. Supervisor Patterson?
I'll pass at the moment, thank you.
Supervisor Lentil?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was my question. I just want to make sure that we're having equal, and I didn't see the language for both sides here. So if I missed that on one of the pages of the pink sheet, but it doesn't specifically say, but I guess council would have to ask, does it need to say both sides, or are we just safe to say that if it doesn't say that, it applies to both sides of the highway, F Street?
No, it doesn't say that.
It says project that meet criteria for smart growth, senior housing, mixed use, green built, and are located within and meet standards of the Old Town Napomo design standard. That's one of three criteria in order to get in a 20% allocation.
Well, where does that leave the west side?
I will try to clarify. And there's actually two sections that refer to those criteria. One that indicates if you meet those criteria, you are eligible for those extra 35 units. That's one section. And then a second section that refers to if you meet those criteria, you get a greater percentage of the available allocations or allotments for that area. So the first criteria says that you're located within the Old Town Napomo Design Plan, and you also meet criteria as smart growth, green build, mixed use, those sorts of things. Or you are... your project will result in the completion of construction of certain road improvements. We do have some clarifying language we would like to introduce for that as well, since the South County Circulation Study road improvement list doesn't include some of these more local connectors that are going to help with the traffic congestion in the interim before the bigger improvements are made.
On the west side?
On the west side.
Okay, can I ask a question?
Go ahead, please.
Before you do your explanation, I want to ask a question. Let's assume for the sake of the argument that not all 35 allocations are applied for in Old Town Napomo, then those would shift over to the east side?
Actually, what we're proposing is that those 35 units would come off the list in the order that the projects are in if they qualify under one of those two criteria. Regardless of which side they're on.
All you're really saying is that if you qualify as the Old Town Napomo, you get the higher percentage of the numbers of units that you can build at one time. Really what it's doing. It's not talking about who gets the first allocations or building permit. No.
Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Chair, I want to get a clarification. Ms. Murray, did you actually hear what Mr. Ovid just said? Because it's what he said is not what I understand it to happen, that the only thing that will the way the language is currently, as proposed today, the only way you qualify for those additional 35 if you're on the west side is if you're adding improvements that are on that circulation list. In other words, you're not required to be affordable housing, smart growth, or any of the rest. You have to do the road improvements in order to qualify. The way it reads.
The way the ordinance reads is that it's an either or. You're either on the east side and you're in the Old Town design area and right. you're smart growth mixed use green build, or you are a project that will result in completion of traffic improvements.
Okay,
on the
west side.
The second section in there, what we've done with this growth management here is we've allowed now to go to 20% build out instead of at the 5% the rest of the county is. And so in order to get qualified for the 20%, you have to be at any one of those things that we numbered before.
That's correct.
Yeah, so there's two areas that it counts that you stated. One is in the beginning allocation that you're either one side or the other for various reasons. And the other one, if you want to get your total more units in a project, in other words, more than the 5% to the 20%, you have to qualify.
That's correct.
Even though on the west side we have the infrastructure as is, we still collect development fees on the east side, correct?
That's correct.
So, which will apply, the same applies to those folks on the west side. Okay, because
that's
the wording is, if I was sitting in the audience, will scare me that I'm being treated more expensively than others. Okay, I want to be sure that that's not the case.
I think if you read it clearly, and I read it for the third time again, it does make sense after Kim said it's in the or, so I think you just have to be
careful. It's either or. I mean,
we have a motion, and we go to Madam Clerk to see if everything is clear.
The only thing I wanted to ask is that if Supervisor Ovid's motion includes continuing setting the hearing for May 23rd as well.
Well, it would, except we just introduced, I guess that's what...
We're introducing it today, and we'll come back to us when it turns, because that's the deadline.
Yeah. And at that one, we actually talk about the carryover and everything else. We finalize that at
so
that
are
meeting
setting,
of the 23rd, yeah.
So you are setting the hearing for May 23rd and the 2nd.
I have another question.
I just had this assumption it was already here.
I'm ready to call for
Mr.
the
Chair?
Question.
Before you take action, we do have some clarifying language that I would like to put out there before you take your final action. And Katrina, do you mind putting this up? Oh, you are awesome. Under Section 3, where it talks about the maximum number of new dwelling units allowed in the Napomo Mesa area, where it talks about those extra 35 units, in blue there it talks about that those are available to the multifamily plan development projects. That was to clarify that those are intended to be for that multifamily list. I'll give you that in case you need to. The second part is in going further in that section under A, where it talks about projects that are located within and meet the standards of the Old Town Napomo design, adding and circulation plan to make it the official title of that plan. and change the wording to say, and are smart growth, senior housing, mixed use, green build, as opposed to meet identified criteria. And then under B, where it talks about projects that will result in the completion of construction of sections of road improvements identified on the South County Circulation Study Road Improvement List, or will result in construction of road improvements where such construction will materially improve traffic and circulation on existing or proposed roads. And again, that's to capture the projects that are creating those links on local roads that are going to help with the traffic circulation issues now before the bigger issues like the freeway on-ramp and some of the major improvements are done there. And making those same changes under, I believe it is section 9.
Yeah. 3III.
So projects that are smart growth, senior housing, mixed use, green build, and are located within and meet the standards of the Old Town Napomo Design and Circulation Plan. And then adding the language under triple I, where it adds, or will result in construction of road improvements where such construction will materially improve traffic and circulation on existing or proposed roads.
The maker of the motion has no problem with that.
Okay. Second, Ms. Bianchi?
Yes, that's fine.
Okay. Why don't we go? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it. With that, we'll adjourn this meeting, and this item will be brought back on May 23rd. And prior to adjourning the meeting, Mr. Lenthal has an announcement to make.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was remiss this morning, and we have an opportunity tonight to support our local 600 Special Olympic athletes. And for those that are listening or those that are watching, tonight at the Vets Hall in San Luis Obispo, 801 Grand Avenue, from 5 to 8 p.m., I would encourage them to come down for a Firestone meal hosted by the San Luis Obispo Police Department. And all the money raised goes to benefit our 650 Special Olympic athletes. And if you are there, I'll look forward to seeing you. Thank you.
Are you done?